KTS 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Monday to you. April Foster is here live in studio, Executive Director of Keyway Center for Diversion and Reentry, a former guest on the Rachel Zimmerman Show, and so it's very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
Yeah, welcome to KMOX.
Thank you.
So tell us everything. Tell us all about Keyway.
Sure. So Keyway is an organization that's been around for about 27, 28 years now. Started out as Center for Women in Transition. We rebranded a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. But what we do is we provide comprehensive wraparound services for women returning from incarceration. So really focusing on all the risk factors that put them at high risk of returning to incarceration, we make sure that we address those through holistic programming and services.
Mm-hmm. How did you get into this?
You know, I am one of those odd people who knew that this was a space I wanted to work in high school.
Wow.
And so I went to college for my bachelor's knowing exactly what I wanted to do. And I've just been able to kind of continue on that pathway throughout my career. I did not ever expect to work with women. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that. They're a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. I actually did a TED Talk last year where I talked about my challenges working with women. But I really, I realized though that understanding their unique pathways into and out of criminal activity is really what makes that critical difference.
Okay. We have so much to talk about. I've always wanted to be invited to do a TED Talk, just putting it out there. I have to do a Dave Talk. So what was that experience like?
Oh gosh.
Intimidating?
Yes. I
heard there's a little mark you have to hit and you can't.
Yes. You have to have everything memorized. Everything is timed down to the second. I am a winger. I'm much better at just sort of talking. But to have something completely prepared is pretty intimidating. So I did it. I can say that. That's about it. But it was great. I mean, it was such a good opportunity to just talk about my own journey, how I landed where I'm at, and why it's so important to focus on this population.
Why are women more difficult to work with?
You know, I think the reason is because they make up about 10% of the incarcerated population. And so everything we do, what we learn in schools, what policy tells us is all focused on the majority. And that's not what women need. And so, you know, going into it, I tried to do all the things that I learned how to do with the majority, and it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you realize that you have to shift. You have to acknowledge that women have extensive amounts of trauma. And it makes them react in different ways. And because of that, you have to focus on mental health. You have to focus on substance use. You have to focus on parenting issues. Mm-hmm. Those aren't always things you have to do to the degree that with men that you do with women.
Are they largely treated like men? Are they just treated poorly? Like, we don't know what to do with them, so we're just going to put them in here.
I think it's a little both. I think generally we could probably do things differently in prisons and jails all around. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that we want to talk about punishment, and I think that, you know, of course that's important, but I also think we want to talk about what's going to reduce risk of returning to criminal activity, and we need to focus on that. Where is the cost savings, right? Mm-hmm. How are we saving taxpayer dollars? Where can we get the most bang for our buck? And that's by focusing on the root causes and making sure those are addressed, whether it's for men or women or gender neutral.
So how different is your real work life as opposed to your training education life? Like, do you look back at that? Like, when I graduated law school and became a lawyer, it didn't have much to do with law school. Like, mm-hmm. it was a whole different animal. Did you find the same thing?
You know, I found what I learned in school very effective with men and boys. Being very direct, being borderline mean, you know, especially as a female, the size that I am in particular, mm-hmm. that worked very well for them. But women, it did not work at all. In fact, every woman and young woman I worked with went to prison for the first several years of my career until I figured it out.
Hmm. Tell me about it. What did you figure out?
You know, I figured it required a different approach. It was really about addressing some of their specific issues, acknowledging that trauma is often related to it's often done by the hands of the people who should have loved and protected them, right? And so there's some trust building that needs to go in there into that relationship before you can start working on anything. And so that was a lot of it. And you're certainly not going to get trust by coming in hard. And so sometimes it's really just listening and understanding what their unique experiences are and making sure that you're addressing and building trust in that, in those processes.
Yes. Rach, Wheels, jump in if you guys want to jump in. So I'm going to guess that females are much different working with them once they're out of prison as well than working with men.
Yeah, I think in particular, they just have different needs. I would say often men will find a couch to land on. You know, whether it's an auntie or a mom or a girlfriend or a wife, because of that connection between trauma history and not having stable relationships, that's not something women often have. And so we see a lot of housing instability. Mm-hmm. In fact, when we look at why women go to prison, most are incarcerated for what we call survival crimes. So that looks very different. So when they come out, the first thing we focus on is let's get you in a safe place to stay where your basic needs are met. Once that's done, then we can start focusing on the skills building and resource building that you'll need to succeed from here.
Yeah. A bit ham-fisted, but do women have a lower recidivism rate overall?
They do. I believe the general average is between 35 and 45% nationally. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit of bragging with our program. 1 year post program enrollment, our recidivism rate is about 5%.
Wow. Good on you. That's great. And I guess a lot of that, too, is just like when people get sober, they are showing that they're ready. It's time to move on. Let's do something mm-hmm. different.
I think that as a society, we often underestimate how much just a little bit of support will yeah. help, right? So being able to just say, here's a safe place to live. Let's start working from here. Like mm-hmm. it doesn't honestly take a whole lot. Just mm-hmm. some acknowledgement of like,
giant
you have some strengths. Let's stop focusing on your deficits. People have been doing that your entire life.
Yeah.
Let's look at what's gotten you this far and figure out how to use that to your advantage in a really positive way.
April, can you tell us about, you know, some of the women you've worked with and some of the success stories that you've been able to witness?
Oh, gosh, there's so many, but some just fast ones that we've been talking a lot about lately. We have one woman now who is she's buying a house, which is really cool, going from being homeless to buying her own home. We have another woman who has saved up $20,000 for her next steps, which is, I mean, it's more than I probably have in savings, let's
nice,
be honest.
Nice job.
We have we've really worked on building pathways to livable wage employment. So we've been doing a lot of work with the trades. We have a lot of women who now have careers in the trades who are making, you know, $20, $30, $40 an hour. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff that keeps women from having to commit survival crimes, right? So, you know, seeing family reunification, seeing those relationships rebuilt or built, you know, just seeing them have some confidence in themselves mm-hmm. is sometimes the big thing is like, yeah, you've got this, you know? And so just being able to see that growth and small and large ways is just, you know, it's what keeps me in this space.
Yeah, that's very cool. Tell us about Keyway. Like, what sort of services do you guys offer and how big is it?
Yeah, so we offer housing, both transitional and recovery housing. Recovery housing, they can stay as long as they want. Mm-hmm. Behavioral health services to address some of that trauma and mm-hmm. substance use disorder. We also offer vocational services, both in job readiness skills, job placement, job retention, and then a range of just life skills classes. So some of that's around financial literacy, nutrition, shopping on a budget, housing, you know, all the things that are really concrete kind of skills that our participants need to be successful once they walk out.
Which we don't teach anyone as much as we should anymore.
No, I can sit in those classes and learn things because yeah. what we also try to do is provide opportunities for our women to build relationships outside of us. And so we invite community members to come in and teach some of those classes. So, for example, we have Neighbors Community Credit Union and St. Louis Community Credit Union. They both come in and do financial literacy coaching, both one-on-one and groups. We've had, you know, Planned Parenthood come in and do sexual wellness. We, you know, so we really just try to pull in people so they have the exposure, both our community, mm-hmm. to see that these aren't just abstract bad things that exist, but they're real people who have real goals and real strengths,
yeah.
and vice versa.
That's cool. We're talking to April Foster. She's the executive director of Keyway Center for Diversion and Reentry. And coming up on Thursday, September 25th at Quintessential Dining and Nightlife on Main Street, you guys have your annual game night. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So this is our third annual game night. This will be a little bit different from last year. Last year, our game night guests played a reentry simulation board game that was developed by staff and participants. Very cool. We still have it if anybody ever wants to play. But this year, we want to take it in a little bit different direction, make it a little bit more collaborative and engaging and a little bit more fun, because it can get heavy to talk about reentry.
Sure.
And so this time it's modeled a little bit like a trivia night, but in a non-traditional way. So basically we acknowledge that people have different strengths in different ways, right? Just like our participants do. And we want to give everybody the opportunity to shine. So say, for example, you're good with your hands. We have a round for that. Good with words, we've got a round for that. So it really mixes things up and makes it a lot more engaging. And of course, there's always the competition. So, you know, like being able to play against other teams, you know, that's always fun. And in Q on Main Street is a new space for us. We love them. They have been very generous in supporting this. And I, you know, with food and drinks and everything ready to go there. I don't know if anybody's ever eaten there. They have really good food. So we're really excited about using that new space as well.
Very cool. How do people get tickets?
They can go to our website, keywaycenter.org, and purchase tickets there.
Okay. Good stuff. Excellent. Okay, let us know. Keep in touch.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Corey. Corey is in Christian Music Radio and recently put together a Mount Rushmore of personal favorite radio shows, and he included the DGS. Super cool.
That's very nice.
Means a lot.
You guys can't see it, but I'm giving a fist bump on the
screen. Yes, you are.
That's what I do.
Your arms are going to be 8 inches long. They just keep getting wider.
I say they are only 8 inches long, which is why I can't scratch my back.
They keep getting absorbed by his shoulders and lats and stuff.
Yeah, you're just going to have little hands sticking out.
He's going wider, and then...
I'm already a T-Rex. I literally cannot scratch barely between my shoulders.
Yeah.
So I have all those back scratchers stashed around the house. And
you were so sad when I walked in the other day and you'd broken one.
Mine broke! The one I got to get a new one now. The one here broke.
Did it break while scratching?
Yeah, but they're like little extenders, but they were super cheap and they just fell apart.
Got caught between his lats and just snapped.
Yeah. Happens sometimes.
Something living in his deltoids grabbed it. Oh, I have a ruling.
Let's hear it.
It's a good one, too. Real life. Okay. So a young man was squiring a young woman around town. Took her to Chili's, one of Rachel Zimmerman's favorites.
Yeah, so
quality decision.
Dream date.
Yeah.
He's fiscally responsible, so at the end of the date, he pulled out a gift certificate.
Yeah.
And the young lady ghosted him. And a couple months down the road, they ran into each other. He said, I thought we had a great date. I just wondered why. And she was honest enough to say, it's because you paid for my date with a gift certificate.
Yeah.
And she thought that was a red flag.
Yeah, you can't do that.
It's not a red flag. But
it's not a red flag, but it's a bad look.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a first date, it would be a little like, oh, so this is why you picked Chili's.
Yes, exactly.
You know, like if she picked Chili's and he happened to have a gift card, I would respect it if a guy was like, oh, I have a gift card. I'd be like, okay, cool. If I picked the Chili's. But if it was like, I have just the place I want to take you, young lady, and then you pay with a gift card. I mean... I think it'd be fine for a lot of people, but I understand the hesitation to continue.
And it's like, where'd you get that gift card? Like, your mom gave you that gift card, you know what I mean? Now you're taking me out on a date with your Chili's birthday gift card
whatever. Look, if
you guys are rough.
If I don't know. Like, I wouldn't do it.
If I'm the guy, I would save the gift card for myself for another time.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to pay for myself to eat at some point. So
because
I'm
getting as many triple dippers as I can for myself.
I would do that. But you know what? Red flag on this girl. If she's going to walk out on you and ghost you over that, you don't want to be a part of that anyway. Because that's, dude, that's, first, it's one thing to say, man, wow. It's another thing to just ghost somebody. You ghost somebody, that's an immediate red flag. I don't care what they're ghosting you over unless you're a total creep. Like, you should at least give some kind of explanation instead of ghosting someone.
There's a big like swell of folks who are like, no, coffee isn't a good enough first date. It has to be a dinner. And no, I'm not a gold digger, because if I was digging for gold, I wouldn't be going to Chili's with you on a Thursday. Like, there's just like a huge online discourse surrounding like, what is an appropriate first date? Should you make him pay for this and this? It gives me a headache to look at this most of the time.
So happy I haven't done that in basically ever, because when you're in high school and college, it doesn't really matter.
Follow up to this. Is there something that the other person could order on a date at like a restaurant that would like make you like, I can't.
Glass
I can't
of milk. Part of this.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. Like if you the guy orders like an appetizer sampler like for himself. With like the smokehouse queso.
I thought you meant more like
sticks.
What if the young man or young woman who's ever being taken out orders like
too
what
much.
You did to me, like when you ordered the $25 skirt steak appetizer at El Burro Loco.
I don't remember that. I don't think that was me.
Yeah. It looked like you.
I don't think that was me, and also it was Rosalita's. I don't think that was me.
Here's a crazy thought. How about on a first date, you just kind of see if you like the person at all?
Yeah,
instead
maybe.
Of like, what did you feed me and how did you pay for
well,
it?
Well, I mean, there's plenty of people who would split the bill on the first date.
Sure.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean.
Yeah, 100% right.
I think if you have this like hard rule for yourself of like, he's got to pay for me. It's like, well, you know, not every guy is going to be like that. I mean, I think it's a little unfair to put. Like, make everything ride on, like, the decision for if he's paying for this Chili's or not. And, oh, my gosh, if he's using a gift card, I'm ghosting. Like, dude, have a little more chill. Like, have a little more understanding. I mean, think it's
responsibility
reasonable.
On both sides.
I mean, the last thing I'd be judging someone on the first date is whether or not they're paying enough money for the dinner.
Well, why was she watching so closely while he was paying anyway?
I mean, he also should probably be a little more discreet. I'm like, I think this guy committed a couple of personal fouls. Like, he goofed. He
he's
probably shouldn't have done it.
He's not a monster, though.
No, he's not.
Well, what do you mean by discreet? Like, I mean, the bill comes to the table.
I understand, but maybe what you do is you have your card and your credit card together, and you put them in there together. You don't, like, make a show of it.
What if your credit card also has the Chili's logo on it?
Guys, DGS on KMOX. Speaking of baseball, tonight's Kevin Wheeler night. Pre-game, post-game.
Man, back to the old days.
Yeah. Hope you still got those chops.
Yeah, I mean, I figure I can do a bunch of 3.5-minute segments.
There you go.
I think you'll be able to swing that.
Yeah, I think you're fine.
Especially since two or three of them are done by Ricky and John, so yeah, it's not too bad. It's not too bad.
The great Bernie Miklas joins us Mondays and Fridays. He's with us today. Hello, Bern.
What's going on? I hope you all had a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, ready for the heat to be gone, but otherwise not too bad at all.
Yeah, I'm tired of these heat advisories. Every time my phone, you know, goes off, there's a warning. It's like, okay, make sure my AC's working great. You know, I hope I don't have to call Saliga, but if I do, they'll take care of it.
That's right. Observation in the most Dave Glover way possible, the least Derek Gould way possible, but I'm not saying the Cardinals are done, but it feels like the funnest, winningest period of the season may be behind us.
I think they're done, you know, because you know you go back to that sweep in Cleveland. And at that point they were 9 games over .500 and everything was looking good. That was their peak point of the season. Since then, you know, they're 14-26. They have the worst record in the National League and they are 29th in the majors. In other words, Tampa Bay is the only team that has a worse record than the Cardinals since June 30th. They've scored the fewest runs in the majors since then. And they're pitching is like 26th overall in ERA, starting pitching's 28th overall in ERA. My point of like laying out these numbers is that when you hear, if that was like a blind taste test and you didn't know what team I was talking about, you say, well, this team's out of it. They're 5.5 games out of it or whatever they are. And this is their profile over the last couple of months. What would you say? You'd say, oh, they're done. They just have too many weaknesses. So that's kind of how I see them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, when you, especially when you consider that in the wild card race, I mean, the Mets have started to level off a little bit and won a couple of games because they were losing nonstop there for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. They're going to level off. So how are you going to make up the 5.5 games? Right. And that yeah. So in terms of the playoffs, yeah, I would still think, I don't know, maybe I'm being delusional. I'm kind of hoping that there's going to be another positive run where it's not like this, because it's not been good for several weeks now, where it's just like, and I get it, you know, you got a couple of key injuries with veteran hitters right now, your rotation, you got a couple of guys that are struggling to get to the finish line in Sonny and Matthew Liberatore, and those guys were your best guys early. So, I mean, I know the obstacles. I just hope there's a leveling off where they can be a little bit more solid at some point soon, because the last couple of weeks have just been hard to look at.
Well, I don't rule out the fact that they can play some good baseball. I'm just saying, and I hope they do, because I like watching them play when things are going well, and I know they're working really hard. But I just, there's just too many flaws to overcome for any kind of sustained success.
Agreed.
And you know they're 10-18 since the All-Star break. That's next to last in the National League. That's what I'm talking about. We can go back, you know, a short time ago, a medium time ago, long time ago, and all the answers are the same. They, whatever they had going for them early in the season is gone. I mean, that's statistically verified.
No doubt. So here's the thing I wanted to get into, Bern, is, and you know, we don't have any shows for the next few days because of the early start times, talking about the Redbird Rush Hour, but I wanted to bring this up because I don't know if I should, I don't want to say be concerned, but is there anything to you with what we've seen from Herrera here lately? I know it's you know, the month of August hasn't been great. I know he missed a little bit of time in July, but really the last 30-40 games, he's been below a 700 OPS, not much power in there. Any concern, or is this just like a young guy who's still learning how to be a big leaguer?
I think that we've seen him at his best. And I think the other teams and all their planning and their analytics department and their pitchers and pitching coach, they saw him at his best too. And then the natural response to that is like, okay, how can we mess this guy up? What can we do to give him a different look and it'll slow him down? And, you know, I'm glad you asked the question, because that's one of the things I wanted to do tomorrow morning, is to put some homework in that about what kind of pitches are giving him troubles. But I didn't do that today because I had a lot of other things to do. But, no, he's flattened off, and it's this is the perpetual cat-and-mouse game that's been going on forever, you know? You got a hot young hitter. Nobody really knows who he is. The other team figures something out. They kind of baffle him and get the best of him, and then he has to adjust. I mean, it's nothing new. This is typical.
Yeah.
But we'll see how he does.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because, like, where he is now kind of matches up with how he was as a big leaguer last year. Like, you know, 809 OPS this year, 800 last year. And by the way, that's perfectly good player, right? That's a plus player. You know, if you're 750 or above on the OPS, you are a plus player. You're above average. But obviously, if you're going to be like an everyday DH or a bat only, we certainly would want to see at least a little more power than what we've seen. And I mean home run power than what we've seen, especially the last 30, 35 games.
No, I totally agree.
Yeah.
Do we think that Donovan is just 162 beat up, or is something a little more sinister?
Oh, I don't know. That's kind of a sore subject with me, and I think Kevin Wheeler as well. There are times where I just don't understand the Cardinals. This guy's been banged up for weeks.
Yeah.
Weeks. And all of these injuries, three different injuries, but they're all related to each other. And what I don't understand is that, you know, he's throwing himself around and he keeps getting re-injured, and then new things happen and he's re-injured again. And I just simply don't understand. I'll ask Ali Marmol about this tomorrow. And by the way, I don't know if it's his decision. He doesn't set the roster.
Right.
When you have a guy who is clearly hurting and a guy whose performance, by the way, has really, really suffered, his offense has cratered during this time because he's not healthy.
Right.
He's not feeling good. His offensive numbers are worse than Victor Scott's. They're more along the lines of Jordan Walker, you know, guys who are really, really struggling. For the life of me, I can't understand the logic of sort of keeping him out of the games, but keeping him on the roster and playing shorthanded when you can, A, bring up Jose Fermin, who did a heck of a job last time he came up, and B, more importantly, you can give Brandon Donovan a stint on the IL and let him actually heal up so you don't keep repeating this over and over again. Because if it's up to the player, I'd say 98 out of 100 players would tell the manager, oh, no, I'm good, I can play.
Right.
And Donovan's one of those guys.
Right.
Part of a manager's job is to protect the player from himself. Brandon Donovan hasn't been close to being the same over the last 6 weeks or so. Maybe it goes back longer than that. And I'm not mad at Brandon Donovan. My point is not to criticize him. My point is to just state the obvious. He's hurting. He has been hurting for weeks. And they won't just shut him down and put him on the IL and let him heal up.
Yeah.
And who exactly does this help?
Well, and then when you combine that with just the basic math of it, right? So he's already missed four games. And as of yesterday, they were saying it's probably another two or three. So he's going to miss six or seven games anyway. Just make it 10 days. There's an off day on Thursday. So you're going to lose an extra two or three games of him, but maybe get him healthier and get a better version of him back and just place the JC every, like, do you have other guys you're still trying to get playing time for?
I just don't understand it. And and frankly, there's no explanation they offer will change my mind. I can just flat out say that.
Do you really, the only read that I can get is the player says he doesn't want to go on the IL, so they give in to the player. Because other than that, I don't understand any logic to it. And even that I wouldn't do, but that would at least be a reason that they could say, no, we're not going to do anything.
I've heard you say this a number of times, Kev, over this season, that the Cardinals are treating the veteran players like bosses. Is that a funny, cute thing to say, or do you really think that they have too much deference for the veterans?
I think most teams in baseball defer to veterans more often than they don't. But I don't think it makes sense, given the Cardinals' current circumstance, to do that. Whether it's a starter who doesn't want to have an opener go in front of him, I don't care. Pitch better. If you're not pitching well enough, you don't get to make that decision. If it's the team, and Ollie has said this out loud. I mean, he said it on Gas House Gang. If Nolan's healthy, he's got to play. Well, why? Why does he have to play? I get that you want him to play, but if he's not playing well, I mean, again, Albert Pujols got benched by the Angels, and he got released by the Angels. I mean, great players sometimes have to be pulled back, and it's not something that you can't do, but the team a lot of times phrases these things, front office and manager alike, as if they can't do it, but you can. You make the decision.
They defer to veterans especially, and I think they view Donovan in the same class that they have viewed, or the same category as they have viewed in the past, Goldschmidt and Arenado. And I'm sorry, he's not them. And I'm not saying it's right even with Goldie when he was here or Arenado to do that. I'm not saying that. But I'm not sure where he got all this equity, where if this indeed is happening, he can basically say, no, I don't want to go in the IL, and they roll over. I mean, I don't get it. Let me give you this just really quick. Since the All-Star break, he's hitting .203.
Mm-hmm.
Since July 1st, he's hitting .240. And since June the 1st, he's hitting .229. And most of that time, he's been banged up by injury. So yep. I'm going to repeat what I've said a couple times. Who exactly is this helping? It ain't helping the team. It certainly isn't helping Brendan Donovan.
No.
So who's it helping?
That's the bizarre part. And you can just change out Brendan Donovan's name for Nolan Arenado's too. Because Nolan has had back problem, shoulder problem, hand problem, and all of it not performing well through it, and you're just going to let him push through. Why not get right and then come back and be a player?
Don't know. It's really weird. And you know, remember when Jose Fermin came up here? By the way, he was having a great, great, great run in Memphis this year, and they brought him up in July because they had a couple different injuries at once. And Fermin played. He played some second base. He played third base. He played left field. He played right field, and he hit .350.
Mm.
So what? Why wouldn't you bring him up? You know he can help you off the bench or whatever. You can move him around, play a bunch of positions. And the guy gave the team a spark when he was up here the last time. Why would you go short? And you got enough problems. Why would you play shorthanded?
Yeah, and obviously combining that with the Contreras day-to-day situation. So you've been playing too short for an entire series against the New York Yankees.
You know, when Victor Scott went on the IL and they called up Nathan Church, I was at home, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. Are you allowed to actually do that? A guy gets hurt, you can bring somebody up? Joke, guys, joke.
that was a crazy injury to Victor Scott.
Yeah.
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 Almost the best catch I've ever seen.
It was fantastic. And I know, gosh, I'm being like so whiny today, so I apologize to everyone.
Okay. That's okay.
But I was watching that game, you know, and he was clearly in pain, and then you saw him hobbling going after that one ball. It was a really great, really outstanding catch. But then I started thinking, like, why is he still in the game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you had nobody on the bench.
What was the point of having him play hurt? And I don't know this, but you know, you have a pretty bad ankle sprain, or you have an ankle sprain that's not just like this minor little thing. You're out there running around on it hard. I don't know how that. I think your ankle might start hurting more.
Yeah.
We don't have time for this, but I just have to say that if I were ever a front office or a manager, I would go down in history for one thing, and that would be I would give my guys the most rest anyone ever had. I would try and experiment in Major League Baseball where I platooned, where I, like, you get, however, you know, you play 3 days a week, whatever, and just see what the big leaguers are capable of on more rest than they've ever gotten.
Or you would be like the Milwaukee Brewers, and you would have so much depth.
Yeah.
You can cycle players in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. The Brewers have played 24 position players this year, and they have used 29 pitchers. Now that is organizational depth,
yeah. Yep.
Which is the Cardinals don't have.
So we're still right in the middle of August. Byrne, tell us about Saliga. Welcome back, DG Asun KMOX. You guys see that the internet has discovered that Jamie Lee Curtis has boobs? It's all over TikTok. She did an event for Freakier Friday.
Uh-huh.
She has always been very attractive and built like a brick house, and she wore something low cut, and the internet is losing their minds.
There were like movies back in the day where they were all out there.
Certainly were.
I mean, this is not new information.
No, it's not. Not to Gen X.
Yeah, I think the new generation is discovering things about Jamie Lee.
Yeah, I mean,
some of us have known for years.
I get it. Like God, even to your late age, Andrew. I mean, she's like a. How old is she? She's 60s.
She's probably 60s.
Yeah, I mean, so you know,
maybe 70.
Yeah, yeah. So again, her prime years of being in big movies were before any of the younger folk would have been watching those movies. But yeah, I think that's funny that people are surprised.
Yeah.
Did you see the interview she gave a couple weeks ago talking about the rise in plastic surgery and filler and stuff among young people? And she likened it to a genocide.
That's right.
Wow, that's a bit much.
It is a bit much. She says she specifically chose that word because she truly feels that we are losing a generation of women's natural beauty to the beauty machine.
Yeah. That I can agree with, but that's a different thing.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to agree.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with her point, though, that like people that don't need any work, not that anyone needs work, but I get it. Like if you, all the guys in Hollywood have had work too, by the way, like you look at Tom Cruise and all those guys, they aren't, that's not how they would look otherwise. But I understand that. But like when you're in your 40s or 50s or 60s or whatever, when you're 18, you don't need work.
Yeah, I do think it's been, we've been sold this lie of like preventative Botox to girls in their early 20s. Like preventing what? You don't have a single wrinkle.
Yeah, and it's not going to happen for years. Yeah.
Like, please just enjoy being young and beautiful.
Yeah.
And worry about that later.
Phoebe talks about this a lot. And thankfully, it talks about it on the right side of it.
Good, good.
That's good. So, that's good.